You are on a sightseeing boat near the Westman Islands off the southern coast of Iceland. Though it's the middle of the summer, it's only 49 degrees. The breeze is brisk and cool and brings a fishy, salty smell to your nose. You hear the calls of seabirds and waves crashing against the rocky cliffs ahead of you. Approaching the island, steep stone cliffs rise up from the cool waters below. The brown stone is dotted with streaks of white, while green grass and yellow flowers flourish atop the cliffs and dance in the Arctic breeze. A streak of black sips past the boat, and you watch it land, teetering on the cliff face. It is the creature you have come to see. A bird about the size of a parrot, with ebony black feathers along the back and a shock of white across the chest and underside. It stands upright on bright orange short legs ending in large webbed feet. The rich dark plumage from the back continues up a short neck to the crown, and large patches of white form circles on both sides of the head. The eyes are a deep, rich brown, surrounded by a ring of orangish red, and have a bluish-gray triangular patch above and a rectangular patch below, making them appear large, expressive, and clown-like. A dark line stretches from the corner of the eye and wings back like eyeliner. The small head is tipped with a large and colorful bill, broad and triangular. A bright yellow patch at the corner of the mouth extends up and down in a thin strip of yellow, which blends into a line of white. A thick black patch with the same triangular shape as the beak leads to blended strips of white, scarlet red, and brilliant orange, ending in a blunt point. The bird waddles towards an almost identical bird. They rub their bills together with a clacking noise before seeming to disappear into the ground. But there are more to watch, as thousands of these adorably formal-clad birds dot the cliffs, taking off and landing, waddling along the cliffs or standing watch outside of burrows. You could sit and watch this great bird city all day and not get bored. You are experiencing the pleasure of visiting the largest colony on Earth of the adorable Fratercula arctica, the Atlantic puffin.
Welcome to your new favorite animal podcast. A podcast for people who love learning about the extraordinary animals that we share our big, beautiful planet with. Join me each episode as we take a journey to learn about a new, amazing, and fascinating creature.
Hello, and welcome to your new favorite animal podcast. I'm Susie Kay, and today we're learning about a fetching feathered friend, the Atlantic puffin. Take a deep dive with me and these water-loving birds to learn more about their cool abilities, strange sounds, and how they were responsible for the creation of one of pop culture's cutest creatures. Hopefully, by the end of this episode, you'll be calling the Atlantic puffin your new favorite animal. Atlantic puffins are medium-sized, compact birds with large heads, short wings and webbed feet on short, stubby little legs. Their shape and small wings lead some people to refer to them as flying footballs. They're about 10 inches or 18 centimeters tall, about the height of a piece of paper. Like many birds, they're lightweight, weighing a little over a pound or around 500 grams. Their back and head are black, while the underside and breast are a bright white. This provides countershading camouflage, with aerial predators unable to locate the birds against the dark water of the ocean, and underwater predators unable to see them as they blend in with the bright sky above. The puffin's scientific name, Fratercula arctica,
means little brother of the north in Latin. The little brother part is because their black and white plumage is reminiscent of a friar's robes. While they look similar to penguins in their formal black and white attire, puffins and penguins are only very distantly related. Basically, they're both birds, but they belong to completely different bird families and live on opposite sides of the planet. The Atlantic puffin resides in the northern parts of the Atlantic Ocean. In North America, they nest from Newfoundland down to the northeastern United States. In Europe, they nest in Greenland, Iceland, and northern Russia, and south to France. They spend the majority of their lives at sea, only coming to land during mating season to raise a single chick each year. Males and females mate for life, but puffins are solitary birds for most of the year. Once their chick is grown, mom and dad puffin go their separate ways out to sea, hopefully to meet up again the following spring. One of the most eye-catching features of the puffin are their large, colorful bills. This and the interesting patches of skin near their eyes lead some to call them the clowns of the sea, and a group of puffins is sometimes referred to as a circus. Interestingly, they only sport these kaleidoscopic accessories in the breeding season. In the winter, puffins shed the colorful outside of their bills. Basically, they head out to sea, and part of their face falls off. When that happens, puffin bills are muted in color and smaller than what you might be used to seeing. They also lose the bright white and black feathers, appearing a more mottled gray. When spring arrives, they molt again, growing back their formal black tie regalia and a bill sporting a bold red tip and two yellow bands with dark blue between them. The face becomes white, and they gain the blue-gray skin patches above and below their eyes that give them that clownish triangular look. The change is so striking that at one time it was believed that they were two entirely different species. Scientists have also recently learned that the puffin's bill glows under ultraviolet light with a bright neon curved streaks between the different colored segments. And as an adorable aside, for this experiment, researchers made tiny puffin sunglasses to protect the bird's eyes from the UV lights. Check them out on my website at yournewfavoriteanimal.weebly.com. But there's a lot more to these colorful bills than providing a pretty face. They allow the puffins to catch and carry back loads of fish to feed their hungry chick. The puffin has a rough tongue, which they use to press the fish they have caught against spines on the roof of their mouth. This lets them open their beak and catch additional fish without losing the ones they already have. This is why you can often see pictures of puffins with bunches of slimy fish hanging out of their bills. Puffins average around 10 fish per trip, but there is a record of one puffin carrying and catching a whopping 62 fish in their bill. The body morphology of these flying football clowns can make them seem a little awkward, but it all serves a purpose. The legs are set far back on the body, causing them to waddle awkwardly, or adorably, on land. But having the legs so far back makes them perfect for swimming. The wings are stiff and small in comparison to other birds, which can make them seem like awkward flyers, but they allow the puffin to swim by using their wings to basically fly underwater while using their webbed feet as rudders. They also have a third eyelid, which is transparent, to protect their eyes and still see their fishy prey while underwater, like a pair of tiny goggles. They're able to dive for up to a minute, and as deep as 200 feet, or about 60 meters. And even though they aren't the most graceful flyers, those wings are powerful, flapping up to 400 times a minute and allowing the puffin to reach speeds of 55 miles per hour or 88 kilometers per hour. Even their beautiful glossy feathers have a purpose, being coated in waxy, oily covering that keeps them waterproof, so they can go from sea to air without any need for blow dryer. Puffins can actually take off right from the water by using those big webbed feet to basically run on top of the water while they catch a breeze. The life story of an Atlantic puffin provides a window into some more of their amazing adaptations. The majority of a puffin's life, or roughly 8 months of the year, is spent alone at sea. They bob around on the surface, diving down to catch fish as needed and as they come available. A tagged puffin was found to have covered 4,800 miles, or 7,700 kilometers, in its 8 months at sea. Puffins are able to live so long on the open ocean because they do not need to find fresh water. They are actually able to drink salt water. The salt that they take in is absorbed into their bodies and moves through their bloodstream to a pair of salt glands located above their eyes. It's basically an in-house mini desalinization plant. The glands remove the salt from their blood, and it flows as a liquid down a duct to the bill, where it's excreted from the nostrils and drips down special grooves on the beak. This process is extremely efficient. I couldn't find any specific information about puffins, but one of their predators, the black-backed gull, can drink 1/10 of its body mass in salt water and have it all eliminated from the body in only 3 hours. This is the equivalent of a 150-pound human drinking 2 gallons of seawater. For my metric friends, this is equivalent to a person weighing 68 kilograms drinking 7.5 liters. But no matter the measurements, that would be fatal. After their long sojourn at sea, the Atlantic puffins make their way back to land, likely the place where they hatched. These are generally rocky islands off the mainland, as they have fewer predators. They collect in huge rafts offshore as puffins arrive from all around, new birds meeting their mates, and generally switching out their introverted personalities to become a group again. These groups of puffins go by many names, including a colony, a burrow, a circus, a gathering, an improbability, and a puffinry. I can't figure out a favorite one here. They're all amazing names. When puffins find their mate, they have a really cool ritual called billing that cements the lucky couple's bond. The pair approaches each other, each wagging their head from side to side and rattling their beaks together. Meet up, check each other out, smack your bills together, and you're a couple for life. Puffins are monogamous, meeting up each year with their mate, even though they spend the rest of the year separated. The birds continue this billing behavior throughout the breeding season to reinforce their bond. Other puffins will often gather around and watch the spectacle. The happy couple will go on shore to create a burrow or return to a burrow that they've used for years. Using their large bills, they dig to design or remodel and kick the dirt out using their webbed feet, often right onto the partner puffin that's standing guard outside. Puffin colonies tend to be very crowded, so puffins have developed complex body language to make living in large nesting groups easier, especially for a bird that's solitary for so much of its life. If a puffin is walking rapidly with its head lowered, it's basically saying, "I'm just passing through. I don't mean any trouble. I'll be out of your hair in just a minute." The puffins that are guarding their burrows do what is called a pelican walk, where the puffin stands stiffly erect with its head up and the beak low to the body, walking with slow, exaggerated foot movements. Puffins even have a special landing position, which consists of landing with 1 foot in front of the other, with wings outstretched and head angled down. This tells the other puffins, "I'm supposed to be here, don't chase me off." It's a sign of non-hostility that relieves the tension when landing in a great big group of puffins. When a bird is ready to take off, they signal their intention by lowering their bodies before running down a slope to gain momentum. If a puffin takes off without this special ritual, it could cause panic and the entire colony will flee to the sky. Though really, the panic just means they all take off, fly in circles around the island for a few minutes, then come back down. However, if all the puffins take off, the baby puffins or eggs are ripe for the picking by hungry predators. This complex body language allows huge numbers of puffins to congregate together, which has important predator defense and social benefits. Puffins don't do a lot of calls, But they do have an awesome rumbling call to communicate their position when they are underground in their burrow. It's kind of like a mix between a duck with a cold and a chainsaw. Here's a pair of puffins calling in their burrow from Simon Elliott on Skokholm Island in Wales. Puffin burrows are usually a few feet deep, and a single egg is laid in the very back. The parent puffins both incubate the egg using special areas of their body called brood patches. The brood patches are bald spots on the underside of the body with enhanced blood flow to keep the egg warm. After about 45 days, the egg hatches, and out pops a puffling. Yes, a baby puffin is called a puffling. The puffling is covered in fluffy black down. Its eyes are open, and it can stand as soon as it's hatched. These guys have it made. Pufflings do not leave the nest at all. In fact, when scientists are observing, they say the only way to tell that a puffling has hatched is to see mom or dad puffin arrive with a beak full of fish. The burrows even have a toilet around the first bend so that the chick can go to the bathroom without soiling its feathers. As the chick gets older, the toilet moves closer and closer to the entrance of the burrow, and the parents leave the food closer and closer to the exit. Kind of like a passive-aggressive hint that it's time to move out. But the parents will continue to provide food until the puffling decides it's time to go. The puffling stays in its burrow for around 38 to 44 days. By the time it's ready to emerge, it has lost the black down and grown feathers, though different than the adults. Immature puffins have a dark, relatively small beak, dark legs and feet, and the facial patches are dark gray. The puffling will emerge carefully at night, when the risk of predation is the lowest. Once it has its bearings, the puffling will run flapping downhill to the water. This sometimes means taking a bit of a leap of faith, as puffins may have nests on huge cliffs, and the puffling basically does a flappy free fall down to the water. From here, it will paddle straight out into the ocean, making it almost 2 miles or 3 kilometers away from shore by the time the sun rises. The puffling will not return to shore until it's ready to start its own family 2 or 3 years later, when it finally grows its fancy bill. Once the kiddo has left the roost, mom and dad puffin go their separate ways and return to the ocean as well. I wonder if the puffins enjoy their great big loud get-togethers or if they prefer their quiet times of contemplation in the open water. If you watch a big gathering or improbability of puffins, they seem curious, cocking their heads at each other's antics and showing little fear when they're surrounded by all of their cohorts. But they spend so much of their time alone. Either way, they are fascinating animals. Did you know that Atlantic puffins are the reason we have the adorable Star Wars creatures porgs? In the film The Last Jedi, the character Luke Skywalker lives on an island called Ahch-To, which in real life is an island off the coast of Ireland called Skellig Michael. Skellig Michael is also a wildlife refuge and home to a large colony of puffins. Mark Hamill claimed that every time you would sit still, the puffins would swarm around, curious about what was going on. The puffins ended up appearing in almost every shot, and it would have been too time-consuming and expensive to digitally remove them from the film. Director Rian Johnson said, quote, "You literally had to watch your steps so you didn't step on these little adorable puffin birds waddling around and pathetically trying to fly," unquote. He decided they needed a Star Wars version of these creatures, and thus the porg was born. Though Rian, I hope you listen to this and realize that their attempts to fly are not pathetic. They're just uniquely puffin-esque. So if you like porgs, you can thank the Atlantic puffin. And if you don't like porgs, what's wrong with you? The Atlantic puffin is considered a bioindicator species. meaning that they can tell us a lot about the health of our environment. Puffins only eat fish, and fish live in the ocean. So pollutants, heavy metals, and other compounds accumulate in a puffin's body, depending on what compounds are in the water. Scientists can take measurements from eggs, feathers, internal organs, or beached birds, and run chemical analyses to check for marine pollution and inform us of the health of our oceans. What can't these little guys do? So how are Atlantic puffins doing? The International Union for the Conservation of Nature, or IUCN Red List, lists them as vulnerable. The European Red List of Threatened Species lists them as endangered. But no matter who you are, all scientists recognize that their numbers are dropping, like many migratory bird species on our planet. Atlantic puffins have become rare in many areas where they were once abundant, and in some parts of their range, there are only a few colonies. Because puffins return to the colony where they were fledged, these colonies are very vulnerable, and one bad storm, oil spill, or avian disease can wipe out the entire population of an area by taking out a single colony. There are some success stories to report, though. In Maine, in the U.S., puffins were overhunted by early settlers for food, eggs, and feathers. By 1900, the puffins were gone from the Gulf of Maine except for two small colonies. In 1973, Stephen Kress of the National Audubon Society began a program to re-establish a puffin colony on Eastern Egg Rock off the coast of Maine. He took puffin chicks from a large colony in Newfoundland and raised them on Eastern Egg Rock. This was done so that the puffins would think Egg Rock was their home and eventually return there to raise their own chicks. Decoy puffins were placed on the island, since puffins will not land unless they see some of their buddies there already. In 1981, the first chick was successfully reared on Egg Island, and today a colony exists there that you can go visit. A similar project was conducted on Seal Island National Wildlife Refuge in the 90s. The National Audubon Society now runs Project Puffin, with a visitor center located in Rockland, Maine. You can visit their website to donate or even adopt a puffin. And puffins can live for more than 30 years, so adopting a puffin can provide you with years of joy. One danger to puffins, and really all migrating birds that you might not realize, is electric lights. As pufflings leave their nests at night, lights from houses and cities can make them get turned around, and they do not find their way out to the ocean. In Iceland, in a town that I cannot pronounce, groups of children and citizens form puffling patrols and go searching for these confused pufflings at night to return them to the ocean the following morning. There's an absolutely amazing article about this in the Smithsonian Magazine, which I will link on my website. It's a great read, even if you don't love puffins. Though, honestly, how could you? All birds can get confused or turned around by bright lights as they migrate at night. So one way that you can help all of our feathered friends is to turn off your outdoor lights at night, especially during critical migration periods. In North America, key migration periods occur from March to June, and then again in August to November. You can learn more about this by researching Lights Out for Birds. This will also be linked on my website. A final danger for puffins is one that we have discussed as a problem for our ocean sunfish as well, overfishing. Puffins are dependent on the small fish to eat and feed their young. These small fry fish are subject to issues caused by climate change. Cold water ocean currents bring nutrients that support plankton. This plankton supports the small fish, which supports the puffins. Changes in sea temperature means less nutrients and less puffin food. Overfishing has caused colonies to have years where not a single puffling survived to fledge. If you are a seafood consumer, make sure you are purchasing sustainably sourced seafood. And if you are not a seafood consumer, you should still be aware of where your meat comes from. Some of the puffins' favorite fish, such as anchovies, herring, capelin, and sand eels, are caught in vast numbers to be used for animal feed for farmed animals and salmon fisheries. So even if you don't live close to puffins, your choices as a consumer can make a difference. Support butchers who source sustainably raised meats, or just give up meat one day a week. Even a small change can make a big difference. So now that you've had a chance to learn about these amazing multi-molting saltwater drinking puffin for you residents, is the Atlantic puffin going to be your new favorite animal? Join me for our next episode and let's see if I can change your mind again. Thank you so much for listening. I have been getting so much awesome feedback on the podcast so far. Thank you everyone who has said that they enjoy it. It really puts a smile on my face. Be sure to check out my website, yournewfavoriteanimal.weebly.com, to learn more about the animals covered on the podcast and see pictures. And if you are so inclined, donate to my cupcakes and coffee fund so that I can continue to improve the podcast. Follow me on Instagram at YNFAPod. And do you have a favorite animal you'd like me to cover? Email me at yournewfavoriteanimal@gmail.com and let me know. And please follow the podcast and share it with a friend or an enemy. I'm not picky. Thank you again for listening. Be kind to each other. Susie out. Your New Favorite Animal podcast is recorded and edited by Susie K. The intro and outro music is Lighthearted Joy by Musictown. Sources used for each episode are listed on the website. Thanks again for listening.